Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I'm here with Kirk this evening. I think JB will be with us. We'll wait and see if he's going to join us this evening. Kirk, it's good to speak with you. I haven't spoken to you in a whole, what, about 3 hours?
About 3 hours has been.
Yeah, enough time for you to go out and get lunch. I've now had dinner, but here on the East Coast, it was fun discussing. We actually went back to the passage we concluded our program this week, or last week on, which was words of the time, Dabri Ha Yomam, First Chronicles 7:24. And we didn't even get all the way through the one statement, did we?
Yeah, very slower. But it was nothing wrong with the show last week. It was real good. This was just some fun stuff to consider. This is heavy duty stuff. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, there's really a lot to it, and the implications, of course, are the part that's so interesting. It's why the several things we encourage people to do. One is to verify the translations that you see in these books, so whether it be Yada Yada or Observations for Our Time Questioning Paul, if you're going to do it for Questioning Paul, you got your work cut out for you because there's five translations for every verse in Questioning Paul, or in An Introduction to God. Just because, for two reasons. One is you should never trust any individual. But by verifying the words, what you find is great confidence that you're able to read and listen to what God had to say. Mm-hmm. And I know that when you first encountered, I think it was your wife, Terry, that actually listened to me on a radio show, and we need to figure out if this guy's telling the truth, because what he has to say is either unbelievably important or stunningly crazy. And the first thing you're going to do is going to read it. And even if it resonates with you, and for a lot of people, it was testimony. They just read it for the first time. It resonates. This is the way it's got to be. It makes so much sense that it's the validation of the translations is that what God has to say is consistent, it's brilliant, it's exactly as we would expect him to be. But still, you went through the process, did you not, of trying to verify the translations to see whether or not they were accurate?
That was Terry said, we've listened to scholars before. We have a library filled with the great preachers and theologians of all time, and they say this and that and the other. Make sure. And she said, "Do you think he's telling the truth?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." However, I'm going to verify everything this time. And it wasn't that I couldn't look it up and find it. After a while, though, it becomes contagious just seeing what you can glean from all these different things. And it just becomes, wow. You know, it becomes kind of a self-study.
That's the second part of the whole thing, is that, that once you go through the process of verifying the words, looking up the words, so long as you're willing to do so with more than one source, because if you just look at one source, it's just not that helpful.
No,
you really are
doing it.
You know, I had a person that sent me an email today. I sent it off to you that had a different view of the imperfect conjugation. They call it a tense, but it's not a tense. It's a conjugation. There really are no tenses in Hebrew, no past, present, and future tense. But it's a conjugation. The imperfect speaks of an ongoing act. And the perfect is a completed act. We use completed as past tense, but the perfect can be something that that is a totally and completely completed act in the past, present, or future.
Yeah,
so that the action will be completed in the future, but it has a beginning and an end, where the imperfect speaks of that which really doesn't have an end. It's a
ongoing.
In Hebrew, it doesn't state when the beginning is, because there is no past, present, or future tense in Hebrew. But the imperfect speaks of ongoing action, and therefore it's very often used to speak about habitual kinds of behaviors or actions, or things that have unfolding consequences over time. So there's two conjugations, and this person very thoughtfully was on one of the bunch of new social sites that have popped up here recently for the express purpose on Facebook of discussing Yahweh's testimony and discussing even my translations of it and some of the insights from it, and asking people questions. And they came with a very different interpretation of the imperfect. And, you know, this person said, hey, are you, concerned? Can you help me through this? And my response is no. You know, I'm not concerned. And no, I'm not going to criticize the person's interpretation. I mean, how do you go about encouraging people to engage in the process? Because the process is really rewarding. And then criticize what they have done. How do you go about saying, there's the joy of the whole thing is actually learning on your own and coming to understand based upon investing the time to engage in this process, and then saying, well, no, what the person did was wrong. So I think that's inappropriate. So it is a great joy. One of the greatest benefits and rewards in life is to invest time trying to understand what God had to say. And while there, I think there are some cases there are right and wrong answers, for the most part, there's lots of room for interpretation, and it's designed that way for us to be able to think about it. So the very fact that we spent an hour and we made it halfway through one statement, First Chronicles 17:24, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, so you know what I have discovered that is, and I know you know, but for old folks, there's an overwhelming preponderance in these words that if you dig them deeper, that are stating the same thing over and over again. There's on the first, on the first page, you've got a reference early. I mean, on the first section we were doing earlier, we have a reference, this future events and forever. And then you come up to Olam next, another eternal thing going on and on and on. There's so many of these words, if you put down all the things you can find, you'll find, gosh, it's the theme that's running through each one of these words. It's amazing how the language works, where these words or reinforcing each other. You know, it's not just a sentence. Right. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't sound very clear to anybody. But I just I find the same thing in this, and I find it again here, and
right.
I find it again here, and he repeats himself a lot.
Right. Yeah, it's why the style of writing has been amplification. So, for example, I'll write. In this case, it begins Wah Shem. And that would be then or and, so, name. So, and it's written in the second person masculine singular, which would be your. So, Washim would be your name, but amplified, your personal and proper name, your reputation and renown. That's right. What we can glean from Shem. And it's interesting, Shem, depending on the exact same word, is also means here and now in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Present, this place. The Shem can
that's
be
in place. Place but put in
it's
place.
Here and now, set in place. Yeah, it's that's exactly right. So Shem is both place and name. And it says here, your name will endure, verified and true. I'm on. And that's the second thing that I want to speak about. Well, we're going to amplify Amon. And by amplify, that means to convey every relevant and appropriate connotations of the word. Now, there are lots of words where there are connotations of the word that are not appropriate for the statement. So it's got to be consistent with the analyst's nature and appropriate for the context of the statement. But I think we are doing God a disservice, and we're elevating our own sense of what's important over God's when we truncate what he says. If we were to pick, for example, Amon, I could say your name is true and just go on from there. But Amon means more than true. So why would you not have, because Amon also means to endure. It means is verifiable. It means can be confirmed. It means is reliable, is dependable, is established and lasting. It means all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So who are we? I think it's just arrogance personified to say, well, I can't, since I can render it, albeit incompletely with one word, why don't I pick the word that I think in English that God was intending, as opposed to sharing all of the words that God could have meant?
Yeah.
He could have said, your name is confirmed. Your name is verifiable. Your name is true. Your name will endure. Your name is reliable. Your name is dependable. Your name is established. He could have said any one of those, and I think it's appropriate for us to convey all of them. Does it make it a little harder to translate because you're putting more things in? Yes. Does it make it harder to read because you're considering more things? Yes.
Yeah. But it's a real study. And you may not get to the first page for a long time, but so what?
Yeah.
Well, you know all the people that have asked you, can you give me the short form, CW?
No.
And you say, oh.
No. Yeah. That if it were possible to provide a short form, that God would have provided a short form?
If he thought that would be the better way to go, fine. But he likes you to study.
Yeah.
He wants you to study.
Yeah, and a dissertation is called
brain.
An abstract. Yeah,
yeah,
a dissertation or a thesis is called an abstract. In a business document, it's called an executive summary, where you present a summation of what you're going to present in the basis, the text, the body of your paper. And the fact is that God doesn't provide one of those.
No, he doesn't.
Do you think it was possible, and do you think that it would be, if it was prudent, do you think God would do so?
It was prudent to him, of course. But
if it was prudent for us,
mm-hmm.
would he do so? Was if it was appropriate for us, if it was beneficial for us to provide an executive summary? Don't
if
you
it
think
was
he
beneficial.
Would so?
Yeah.
But he didn't, did he?
No.
So the
like
fact
you,
that he
you
did,
can't learn Shakespeare from Cliff Notes.
No.
I mean, that's
way below. You're never going to come to understand the inner workings of the Torah and the way things fit together on a shortened, summarized variation. So this is your name will endure, verified, and true. confirmed and enduring, reliable and dependable, established and lasting. Now, this is the next part of translation that I think is so rewarding. It's one thing to know that God has a name. It's another thing to say that God's name is verifiable, which means that all of the religious acts to hide it, to replace it with the Lord 7,000 times, if you're diligent, they won't stop you.
Yeah.
If you, and it's also important to know that God said his name is going to endure. So all these attempts to change it to Allah, to change it to Jesus. He says, no. Yeah, not working for me.
No.
Now, the next thing is he says is, and also it will be revered and great, Gadol. Gadol is honored and promoted. Gadol means will be viewed as enormously significant. So if Yahweh's name is going to be, is enduring, verifiable, and true, and is going to be revered and great, that puts the Roman Catholic Church in a whole world of hurt, doesn't it?
Especially since they won't allow you to say it.
They won't allow you to say it or write it in any one of their buildings.
Organized things, yeah.
So if Yahweh says his name is great and is verifiable and is true and it's going to be revered as great, the Roman Catholic Church, having outlawed it, is in a world of hurt. The folks at the New American Standard who said that that there is no significance to Yahweh's name and it bears no value to us, therefore we're not going to use it, we're going to replace it with the Lord, they're in a whole world of hurt, aren't they?
That's even worse.
I don't know if it's worse, but it's bad. It's certainly bad. All Muslims that changed it to Allah, all Christians that have either replaced it with the Lord or Jesus Christ. That's why, why Yosha in the Sermon on the Mount said, none of you who refer to me as Lord, are going to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
If you don't know Yahweh's name, you do not know God. If you do not know God, you aren't part of his family. I mean, it really is that simple. They go and say, hey, but we cast out demons in your name. We built mighty institutions in your name. We did all this wonderful stuff in your name. And he says, get away from me, all you who are Torahless. I don't know you.
Well, how could they even say that? They didn't use his name.
That's correct. He just says, I don't know you. Get away from me. And the opposite is true. And that's the point. If you're calling God Lord or Jesus or Allah, you do not know him. If you do not know that his name is Yahweh, understand the enduring, establishing, and dependable great importance of his name, the significance of his name, you not only don't know him, you aren't engaged in a relationship with him. There is no hope of salvation if you do not know his name. So Dode is here, this whole passage here that we've just beginning again, and we went through a week ago. Yahweh has affirmed to Dode, that Dode is David, that he has earned this extraordinarily important place in heaven and in eternity, and that that Yahweh loves him as his son, and that from God's point of view, Dode is right. He's righteous. He's vindicated, and that there's a very special seat of honor in heaven.
You know what Terry told me the other day? She said to me, she said, he was talking about Dode, and she said, he's really, or she feels it, I believe he's about on the money. Dode became the son that he couldn't get from Adam.
Yeah. It's my conclusion and when I say it's my conclusion, now this is just me thinking these things through. It doesn't mean that I'm right, but it's a thoughtful conclusion. It's my conclusion that the single most important person in human history is Doug.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Doge is actually more important than Yosha.
Yeah.
Now, Yosha fulfilled the first four Mikrae.
Yeah.
Actually, he fulfilled the first Mikrae, and his soul, which was really Yahweh's soul, fulfilled the second Mikrae. And the third was enabled by the set apart spirit, and the fourth was enabled by the set apart spirit. How much did Yosha leave us in terms of written material that we can study and analyze?
Well, the tragedy, there isn't any.
Nothing. Not a word.
We have some Greek documents or copies of some Hebrew documents that are from guys who walked around with him that were hardly what those left. No comparison.
You know, if we try to translate the Greek of Matanyah, Matthew, back into Hebrew, and then from Hebrew into English, and then from Hebrew into English, you know, we can get a reasonable understanding of what he said,
mm-hmm.
but my goodness, it's not all that.
But I have another problem because I'm doing some of that right now, just because I wanted to. One of the problems is that even though you're bringing it back, we don't have anything necessarily to check it with. Only thing I can do is I can say, okay, if he said this, if they report he said that, and more times than not, Yahushua is quoting something from the Torah, or he's amplifying something from the Torah, and I can find that source, then I'm pretty good on believing it. You know,
right.
That's all I can do.
I mean, that's really all I can do is And I have to immediately discard most of Luke because he was not an eyewitness. That makes it hearsay. I've got to discard most of Mark because he was not an eyewitness. That makes most of what he has hearsay. And Yael Conan was so badly edited, so significantly edited by the early church that a lot of it's not reliable.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really have is Matanyah.
Right.
And some of Revelation, but Revelation, you can
document some
most of what's
Daniel.
Important in Revelation. You can actually deduce through Daniel, and there's other parts of it that are presented in Zechariah, Malachi, and Yeshayah. So there are places where you can go back to the original things that he was saying and figure them out. But Matanyah is really all you have, other than that, in terms of the words of Yosha. And that's the only you can do. You can take what he said, render it back through the mindset and the vocabulary of Hebrew, and use the times that he quoted or was explaining the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Go to the passage that he was quoting, see how that passage was rendered in Greek, and then be consistent with the translations of Greek back into Hebrew with the other things he said.
Yeah.
And you have some places where you've got a real advantage. One of the great places where you have a tremendous advantage is in, like the Olivet Discourse. Most of the Olivet Discourse is directly out of Zechariah. So you can go to Zechariah, translate it out of the Hebrew, and you've got something that you can work with. But, you know, for the most part, if you want to extrapolate, if you want to deduce insights, you've got to do it from the Hebrew. And the great insight from this particular statement, your name will endure verified and true, and also it will be revered and great, Yahweh, is that, and it says throughout eternity, Yahweh, is that that statement destroys Christianity, absolutely destroys Christianity, that has no credibility. Because there is no mention whatsoever of Yahweh's name, and they replace Yahweh's name with the absolute fictitious G Jesus Christ. I mean, there's no part of Jesus Christ that is valid. And yet that's what they do. And there's no mention of Yahweh. And matter of fact, you know, when I was getting ready to start the show, and I'm using a browser that I didn't have the Blog Talk Radio bookmark, and so I via Google, Vyada Radio. And about the same place, there was a Yada Yah cult, was one of the most popular links.
Wow.
And you just go and you say, how can you have a cult where the only thing that we have in common is a reverence for Yahweh's name and his testimony?
And, I mean, we're reading the Torah. Half of it is in the Christian Bible. All we try to do is get back to the original language.
Well, all of it, the entire Torah, Prophets, and Psalms are in the quote-unquote Christian Bible. Unfortunately, the translations are not accurate, but it's all there.
But
yeah.
and
just listen to the actual Hebrew of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and made an attempt to translate it as completely and accurately as possible, and then to think about the implications. And the implications of this statement, your name will endure, verified and true, and also will be revered as great throughout eternity, Yahweh. If you just go where the words lead, if you're rational about it, destroys Christianity and Islam. God's name is Yahweh. His name is great. His name will endure. His name is verifiable. His name is true. It also destroys Judaism, which says his name cannot be known.
Known or spoken out loud. Let me ask you a question. Every interlinear or every lexicon that I find, there's a number, 3068. That's Yahweh's Strong's number that most of them use. Not all, but I've got some that don't. Everywhere you go, everywhere you look, where you, it says Lord or whatever, you look over to the right-hand side further on there, and we'll have Yahweh. Now, they won't pronounce it right. They'll spell it phonetically Yahweh. We already discussed that earlier today. But so what's the argument that you wrote it?
Does Yahweh have a book that is entitled Teaching and Guidance?
It's the Torah.
Yeah, Torah. Did you pronounce it as Torah?
I did indeed.
Does anybody in the world that's going to say, no, it's not Torah, it's Tira or Tura or Tara, or is there any other viable pronunciation of the word, or does everybody say the word the world over the same way, Torah?
Christian, Jew, Islam, I'm sure it says the same thing.
Yeah, everybody knows it's the Torah.
It's the Torah.
Where is the O sound from Torah coming from?
It's coming from the Wah, O-W, or O.
Yeah, okay, so that's one of the four letters in Yahweh's name, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So Torah, which means Yahweh's teaching and guidance, tells us that the Wah should be pronounced as an O.
Mm-hmm.
How about the single most commonly spoken Hebrew word? How do Hebrews... Jews greet one another.
Of course, it's always shalom, shalom, or shalom.
Yeah,
if you're affectionate, it's usually shalom.
Right. And shalom, the O in shalom, what is the source of that vowel?
It's the same thing. Yes, sir.
It comes from the law, doesn't it?
Indisputable.
Yeah. And so the Hebrew law is pronounced O. It's not hard to figure out. 80%, 85% of the Hebrew words with the law in them is pronounced O, just as the overwhelming preponderance of English words with a O in it. You know, how now, brown cow.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those, the O is preceded by the W.
Yeah. How about
it's ubiquitous in English as a legacy of Hebrew. Oath, own are examples of that. Owl. It's not hard to figure out. And the at the end of his name, turn to Yahweh's book of teaching. It's T-O-W, T-W-R-A-H. It's in Hebrew, mm-hmm. T-W-R-H. Ah, mm-hmm. at the end, from the hey. 99% of all Hebrew words that end in the ha, the h, are pronounced ah, including the verb that Yahweh says at the basis of his name, Haya. So that's not hard to figure out. And there's no one has ever questioned the pronunciation of the yod in Hebrew. For example, it's Yisrael.
Yes.
Yehuda.
Mm-hmm. Yehudi.
Right, Yehudi.
Everybody says it all over the world forever.
Right, yeah. So there is no question as to how to pronounce Yahweh's name. It's very straightforward. It's extremely easy to figure out. But to figure it out, you've got to invest the time. You've got to look at the words. You have to have an open mind. You've got to be consistent. You have to be rational. You have to know where to look. You've got to find the answer, the teaching, the guidance, the direction in the Torah. And does Yahweh present his name in a significant number of times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
Well, as we all know, it's 7,000 times.
Exactly.
And then it's like 3,500 other times is attached to other names or things.
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Yah and so forth. Yeah, O'Connor.
Correct.
Even.
Yes. Yes. It's all over the place. Your name will endure, verified and true, confirmed and enduring, reliable and dependable, established and lasting, and also it will be revered as great, honored and promoted throughout eternity, ad olam, forevermore, for all time, by saying Yahweh of the spiritual implements, the Saba. Saba, of course, is a term that is just relegated to hosts in 99% of English Bibles.
Right.
I don't know what a host is, by the way, unless, as you know, it's a hostess, a male version of a hostess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what Saba means.
Yeah.
Saba speaks of a vast array of implements. And these are living implements,
mm-hmm.
spiritual implements, and a command and control regime. What that means is that the implements, these spiritual implements, are effectively tools. Now,
right.
You can be an implement, an ambassador, a messenger of someone where you are given a command to do something. Now, command and control regime means they do not have free will.
Mm-hmm.
Malak are told what, these are Malak. They're told what to do. They do what they're told. Yeah, they do what they're told. They're told what to do. They do what they're told. It's just like a hammer isn't living. But, you know, you tell a hammer, you take your hand down on the hammer and it's going to strike the nail. A computer, you program the computer to do something, and it will do as you program. Artificial intelligence with robots like iRobot, that movie, but any of the artificial intelligence they're putting into robotics at this point, while they're not living, it's getting closer and closer to what a Saba would be. Is it? Yeah, it was a seven-dimensional construct. Even if he was fully four dimensions, he could not fit into the universe as we know it. But
no.
Most certainly a seven fit into this universe. So to interact with his creation, and he had to create a universe in lesser dimensions. You know, a six-dimensional entity can't create a seven-dimensional universe. A six-dimensional entity can modify the sixth dimension, but he can't create an entire universe in six dimensions. But a six-dimensional or seven-dimensional entity can very easily, extraordinarily easy for them, create a six-dimensional universe. And our universe is six dimensions. We understand three of them. Einstein was able to understand four of them, with time being the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fifth, and a sixth. I think that the explanation for the fifth and sixth are going to be ultimately discovered as related to dark energy and dark matter. One attractive, one repulsive. So one relationships, one choice. We haven't the capacity to visualize that. But we do know because we can look the other direction. You work on a two-dimensional canvas. You can't get into the canvas. You can't. The entirety of you will not fit in that three-dimensional realm. But you can use implements, brushes, and pigments, can't you?
Paintbrushes and paintbrushes,
right.
Certainly.
Right, and you can interact with your two-dimensional world as a three-dimensional construct through those implements.
Right.
Now, if those instruments were vastly more complex, if they were energy and spirit-based, and if they were living, that would be the equivalent of Yahweh in the seventh dimension interacting with us in three dimensions with his Saba, which are Malak.
Yeah.
And so he refers to himself, and Dode is referring to him as Yahweh of the spiritual implements, the Saba, because there are only a certain number of ways that God can interact with us and be known to us. The Saba play an enormously important role with Yahweh's family. They protect us.
Yes.
And they intervene to protect Yah's children, but they also are Yahweh's eyes and ears, if you will, on planet Earth.
It's communication people, yeah.
Right, yeah. So we mentioned, you know, the other implements of Yahweh are his word, which is his primary implement. The primary representation of Yahweh in three dimensions is his word. You have his set apart spirit, on occasion you have Yahusha.
Yes.
But the point I was going to make earlier on Dode is that I think it's hard to argue that Dode isn't, and he's the speaker here, isn't the most important person of all time, because Dode told us how to properly observe the Torah, how to participate in the covenant, how to analyze Yahweh's testimony, how to engage with him, what's important. You know, here's a guy whose behavior was not good, but was viewed as perfect by Yahweh. He's the one person Yahweh says, I love him. And he's the person that explained precisely what happened on Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah. That was Psalms 22 and 88. He's the one that presents Yahweh as shepherd in the 23rd Psalm. He's the one that systematically, with eight sentences devoted to each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet in alphabetical order, presents the method for properly observing and understanding the Torah in Psalm 119.
Yes.
Dode is the ultimate the most articulate writer. His analysis of Yahweh's testimony and lyrics based upon it are unsurpassed. Of the 120 some odd Psalms, Dode wrote about 80% of them. So it was about 100 Psalms, and he wrote about 25 Proverbs, 20 to 25 Proverbs. Plus, he is the primary subject of much of Chronicles and Kings. There is nobody that we know more about. So why would that be? Why would he have produced the most written material for us to consider, and is the person we know the most about, if he wasn't the most important?
That's a pretty good argument.
You know, how many people did Yahweh say, I'm going to establish his kingdom?
One.
Yeah, how many people did God say, I really, really love him?
Yeah, that's still
how many people did Yahweh say, he is my son, I am his father? How many people did Yahweh say, he's righteous, he's perfect and vindicated?
Well, there's a couple. He said Abraham, too, you know, when he up on Mount Moriah. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, he called, you know, he told Abraham, really, when Abraham figured it out after Yahweh took him to heaven and showed him the spiritual realm, and then the light of the stars. And so Abraham knew what he was going to inherit in the covenant. Yahweh credited that to him as him being Tzedak, righteous, yeah, vindicated and correct. So by acknowledging his desire to participate in his understanding of the covenant,
but there's no argument. It's like the favored son, no question. And, you can't get it any other way.
Right. And so here's the person that Yahweh says he's perfect, he's vindicated, he is my son, I am his father, and this man is saying your name will endure, verified and true, and also it will be revered as great, honored and promoted throughout eternity. By saying Yahweh of the spiritual implements. By the way, there's not one religious Jew in the world that can say this, because the punishment for saying Yahweh's name is death.
Yahweh,
right, of the Saba, of the spiritual implements, is the God of Yisrael, of individuals, Yisrael. You've got to know what Yisrael means, so that you don't say, well, that's the God of Israel. What's the God of America? I want the God of Christianity.
I want the American God, but I don't want the American God.
Yeah, well, there is no religious God. Religious gods are man-made constructs. Yeah. Yahweh is the God of Yisrael. Now, what does that mean?
Well, it's
Yisrael when you look at Yisrael, you can see that there are three very, very common Hebrew words. Yish is the Hebrew word for individual. It means person, individual. Sarah is Sarah's name, the mother of the covenant. Her name means to engage, to endure, to struggle with, to strive with. And struggling with is an okay thing. God doesn't mind if you struggle with them.
Well, we all struggle. Yes,
absolutely.
We're walking out of path. Yeah, we all have our good moments and bad.
Right. I struggled with. I did a lot of chores today. As you know, I did one of them poorly. Dropped a can of primer and spilled it all over the floor of my garage, which means that it was then all over my hands. I struggled, and I'll struggle with it again for these next few days as I prepare these wrought iron railings for paint, because you just can't paint them. You've got to struggle to get the old paint off, and then sanding them meticulously, and then you know. You have to. There's a certain kind of metal cleanser that you have to use, and then there's a prep for the primer, and then you got to prime them, and you got to paint them. And multiple coats. There's a lot of work. You're going to struggle to get it done. There's nothing wrong with struggling.
No.
But it means to struggle, to strive, to endure, and to be empowered by. And El is the title for God. So. By saying Yahweh of the spiritual implement, Saba, is the God of Yisrael. So that'd be individuals who engage and endure with God. And a God for Yisrael. He's a God for those.
Very specific on the of and the for.
Yeah. Of Yisrael and for Yisrael.
Yeah.
Right. And now this, by the way, is a real, real problem again for Christianity. Because he didn't say he's a God for the Gentiles. Didn't say he was a God for the God of or for the church. Didn't say he was a God of or for Arabs or Romans or no, it's
no.
And this is forever.
Right. We've already established
throughout
that.
Throughout eternity, that Yahweh of the spiritual implements is the God of Yisrael and a God for Yisrael. Man.
Kai, four, is in the accusative. I'll be with thee, a fact sworn to, an affirmation. I mean, it's pretty heavy-duty stuff. He's already said who he's of. I could say I'm of Babylon, or I'm of Alabama, you know,
right.
Or California or something. But four is, he's being real specific now what he's whose side he's on.
Right. And so if you're a Christian, he didn't say that he was for you. Most certainly didn't say it was for a church.
Absolutely not.
That's all this whole idea of replacement theology. That's utter nonsense. Eternity, unchanging, verifiable and true. That's what this says. He's a God of and for Yisrael. Individuals who engage and endure with him. And Yisrael is a specific place, and it is a race of people. But it's also a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to engage and endure with God? And the family of Dodd, you can look at the family of Dodd and say, all right, that was Solomon was next in line, the preferred son. And you could say that Yosha was a descendant. But the family of Dodd, when I read that, the Beath Dodd, and Dodd means beloved, so this is the beloved family. God only has one family. Dodd happens to be part of that family, but Dodd represents the family. Dodd is the exemplar, the family. You want to be viewed by God similarly to Dodd, and I don't think any of us could ever reach the esteem and love that God had for Dodd. But if you want to be even in the same zip code as is Dodd, then you need to enjoy doing the same things Dodd enjoyed doing, which was writing lyrics to Psalms that celebrated the Torah of Yahweh, that celebrated Yahweh's name, that sought to understand and then share Yahweh's nature. That's what made that man special. So the family of Dodd, I think, is simply the covenant family.
No problem there.
And Dodd refers to himself as Ebed, your associate, your implement, your co-worker, your servant, your assistant. Yahweh could, but decided not to, engage directly. He works through people. He could have freed his children from Egypt. In fact, it would have been easier for him to do so. But he chose to go with an 80-year-old man, Moshe. Yahweh could have established the kingdom of Yisrael, but he decided to do it through this shepherd boy, Dodd. Yahweh could have conveyed his Torah on his own and his prophets and his own prophecies in his own voice, but he chose men to do it because the entire purpose of creation was to create a family and then create a universe that we could go off and explore together, do things together. The whole purpose is to do things with us. So why not communicate through us and with us right from the beginning?
Yeah, let us be part of the equation. Of course.
Correct.
Well, in that family, way? In that a father way?
Sure. Yeah, let's go do this stuff together. Let's learn by doing it together. Let's grow doing it together. Let's have some shared experiences.
Yeah.
So Dodd was his implement. You want to be loved by God? Associate with him. Work with him. Assist him.
Now, one of the troubles you have, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, one of the troubles you have when you look up a bed, though, you have it more often than not says servant or slave. Servant is usually either an indentured servant or someone who's just working for pay, which is not the concept of a covenant family. So you have to dig a little deeper, and you get of course, co-worker and prophets and witness, and like yours, too, as associate. And so those are some of the things when you look them up, you have to have more sources than just one, because
right.
They love you. Religious lexicons would love to have you believe it's just slave or servant of and bow down.
Yeah. When Yahweh says, he is my son and I am his father, can Dodd be a slave?
No.
Was there any part of Dodd's life that was that could be equated to slave?
This is Mr. Free Will.
I mean, If Dode was a slave, would he have had this grand home on Mount Moriah?
No, hardly.
And the master had no home.
Yeah, that's upside down.
Yeah.
An earthly thing.
If Dode was a slave, would he have had the harem?
No, slaves don't have harems.
No. And if he was a slave, would he be called son?
No.
No.
He would be beneath the master.
No.
Beneath the Lord.
So to render it slave is to completely misrepresent the stated relationship that Yahweh designated between Dode and himself. So that's when you get into translation. Well, you could justify Ibid looking at the lexicons as slave. You can't use it in this context.
Not at all.
It just can't be done. You would be irrational, ignorant, to use it in this context. Mm-hmm. You've got implement, associate, co-worker, servant in the sense of one who serves. You know, to serve is
a
noble
attitude. That'd be work. Work performed out of gratitude would be another meaning, or worker is another Ibib. You know, you could say
right.
It's a worker, but you can also you have two choices there. You have gratitude or requirement. It wasn't required. It was something he chose to do because of appreciation for his father.
And so it can be your associate or your implement, your co-worker, and then it says, will be established and sustained, kun, will be prepared, steadfast, ready, and supported, even upright, by your presence. So, if he were a slave, are slaves established and sustained, prepared, upright, supported? No. The opposite. And so, he's saying that by acknowledging Yahweh's name, by revering Yahweh's name, by knowing that Yahweh's name is verifiable, dependable, enduring, and true, and that Yahweh is the God of Yisrael and mm-hmm. a God for Yisrael. Dode then knew as a co-worker of Yahweh that he was going to be established and sustained by by God's presence.
Yeah, you just finished saying earlier that he was Yahweh's name, that he's established, upright, reliable, etc., and then you repeat it again. He's giving, he's talking about now Dode is his co-worker, his associate is now getting all the same attributes. That's not a master-slave relationship. So
of course not. No, it's a father-son relationship. Yeah, father-son relationship. Because indeed you, my God, have revered and made known revealed and made known by opening the ears of your partner, your Abed, to build a home for him. Therefore, and for this reason, your implement, your co-worker, can continue to investigate, approach by anticipating intervention, and render thoughtful decisions about coming into your presence. So here is now Dode saying, okay, indeed. You made yourself known by opening my ears. By opening the ears, you know, all of us, I mean, most all of us mm-hmm. can hear. But opening the ears is very much like opening the eyes, opening the mind. They're all related concepts. That means you're receptive.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. You know, I was having a discussion with a guy that's connected politically, and you know, he was having a discussion with someone who was trying to justify selling $100 billion worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, the justification was, well, if we don't sell them to the Saudi Arabians, the Russians or Chinese will. So we might as well do it.
Well, let them.
Well, you know, and of course, this person that I was talking to said, well, that's kind of like saying, having an older brother tell the younger brother, you know, maybe you ought not do drugs, but if you are going to do drugs, why don't you buy them from me?
Yeah.
Since you can get them from somebody else down the street, wouldn't it be better that you buy them from me? And what I told them was, don't respond to the political person. They are not going to be receptive. When a religious person says that by acknowledging Yahweh's name, that we are in a cult, you aren't going to reason with that individual.
No, pray not.
Just leave them alone. You are not. Yeah, and so the thing that God did for Dodd, that at least Dodd credited God for, is that he opened his ears, opened his eyes, opened his mind. And, of course, it's interesting that he used ears here because Dodd was a vocal person. He wrote songs.
Mm-hmm.
All of Dodd's psalms were set to music. They're lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dodd spoke Yahweh's testimony. And if you're speaking it, you can hear it. When I'm going through and translating, I'll translate it first, by sight, doing the putting it all into the text, and then I'll read it out loud,
mm-hmm.
so I can hear it.
Yes.
So what this is saying is that Dodd recited his lyrics. And with an open and listen to them with an open mind.
Yeah, sang it to himself.
Because indeed you, my God, have revealed and made known by opening the ears of your partner that to build a house for him. Now the question here is, did God make known to Dodd to build a house for him, God? Or that God wanted Dodd to build a house on Moriah. Is that him, a capital H, or lowercase h?
Oh,
I've written it with a lowercase h.
Yeah, it's a lower, but if you know what you said, your partner to build a home for him, he did do that. If you extrapolate home by us as the family, he certainly increased the family. Built a family.
Yahweh built a home for Dodd. Yeah,
I know that's a stretch,
home
but
that he built for Dodd.
Yeah.
And Yahweh pulled this man without
a
home, who was living with sheep out in a pasture, and he facilitated that man to have one of the most beautiful homes in the most beautiful place in the world. That's the king of Israel on Mount Moriah. So, because God never asked Dodd to build a house for him in the sense of building a house for God. As a matter of fact, what we're going to find out in a moment is God says, no, I don't want you to build a house for me.
No.
You're not going to do it. In fact, I'm precluding you from doing it. But it's all about coming into God's presence via a home. Therefore, and for this reason, your implement can continue to investigate, approach by anticipating intervention, and render thoughtful decisions, la palal, about coming into your presence. Now, la palal, that is the operative word here. And palal is very seldom in English Bibles translated as I have it here. You look up palal, because it's in conflict with all the English Bible translations.
Extensive studies on that. The problem with it is palal is the number one of all the words used for prayer. It's the number one. And when you look it up, it's in the Christian lexicons, palal becomes to pray or to fall down on the ground, to face in the dirt, in the presence of an authority, to plead a cause, to make a request, as you
know. There's a lot of Hebrew. There's a lot of Hebrew words to bow down, mm-hmm. prostrate.
That's about seven. Yeah, about seven, five.
Palal is not one of them. So the only reason that palal is defined that way in the lexicons, and that's why you've really got to be thoughtful when you do translation,
mm-hmm.
is all of the lexicons were published on behalf of Christian Bible publishers to mm-hmm. validate and support their own translations. So they translated palal prayer, and because they view prayer as on one's knees, they extrapolate it as to bow down in prayer. But
yeah.
That's not the meaning of the word. The word doesn't mean that. In fact, the P in Hebrew is the mouth, isn't it?
Right, it is the mouth.
Okay. So that could be any spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other two letters are both L's. What is the L in Hebrew?
Well, it implies given direction or guidance. It's
right, a shepherd's staff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's a staff, yeah.
Yeah, so Palal would be to speak as a shepherd about shepherding.
Mm-hmm.
As a shepherd about shepherding. So that's a shepherd has to investigate,
yeah.
has to approach, and anticipating, has to engage in thoughtful decisions, has to exercise good judgment, has to intercede for the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
But the letters that comprise the word means to speak as a shepherd about shepherding. There's no bowing down there. There is no prayer there. You ever see a shepherd pray? Pray to a sheep? Pray on behalf of a sheep?
No.
I mean, it's just nonsense. So when you looked up Palal, I've told you how I rendered it, which is La Palal, which means to approach. Law does. Can continue to investigate, approach by anticipating intervention, and render thoughtful decisions. That's how I translated it. What did you learn?
Well, I learned quite a bit. Is the I like what you did. It kind of sent me off on some things. I looked at the letters, and if you just take them straightforward, to speak to an authority as they in that context, or but we also asked for direction and guidance. I think you could do Palal that way. There's nothing wrong with asking for guidance. And where do you ask? You go to the Torah, where God spoke to you. I'm not talking about
in fact, for somebody to say, God, I want to know, God, I want to know your will for my life. That's stupid because
that's
God already stated it. You don't ask God for forgiveness because He has already stated the means to forgiveness.
Right.
You don't ask God to reveal Himself to you because He's already revealed Himself to us. You know, it's like if I tell my son that this is how you go about washing your car, and I'm going to give you all of the instructions of what kind of soap to buy, what kind of sponge to use, how to hose it off first, how to be careful in the way that you sponge it off and remove the dirt and the debris, and what you use to towel it to dry so you don't scratch it, and what kind of wax to use, and how to work it in. And if I go through all of the explanation, then I intervene to demonstrate how to wash the car, and then we go through a process of engaging in this, and I explain it 100 different ways, which would be exactly what God's done with every bit of this in His Torah and His prophets.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son was saying, okay, so could you tell me how to wash the car? You're just going to be exasperated. And that's what Yahweh is when somebody says, well, you can tell me how I can be saved.
Yeah.
Can you tell me
your
will for my life?
There's a story about this. There's a story about that you did on the air. I was there. About going to Yahusha, not Nicodemus, that wasn't his real name, but we'll go with the English translation. But Nicodemus, he said how to get saved, and he keeps pointing back to the Torah. If you're asking for directions, if you're asking for help, if you're asking for or a request for understanding, it's always going to send you back to the Torah. Because the Torah is...
Yes, by the way, there's a 0% chance the man's name was Nicodemus.
Yeah. Because he's not Nike.
I mean, the man's name might have been Nathan.
In Greek, no.
Which means gift, or Natanya, which is Yahweh's gift. But, you know, like we have the prime minister of president of Israel today, Benjamin Netanyahu. So he could have been Netanyahu, Yahweh's gift, but he could not have been Nicodemus.
No.
There were no students of the Torah who were Greek, and Nicodemus would be named after the Greek god of victory.
Anywhere you turn, you get the same
let's
thing.
Let's call him Netanyahu. He asked Yosha, so, you know, how am I to be saved? And Yosha tore him to ribbons. I mean, this is the preamble to the verse that Christians want to cite all the time, John 3:16. When, you know, he asked about how I go to be saved, Yosha said, what's wrong with you? Are you not a teacher of the Torah? Do you not, how could you ask that question?
Yeah. Why don't you know that?
When I presented the answer.
Yeah.
So absolutely, you know, that's why it's this idea of praying to God about these kinds of things is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, the King James has Dode saying in his heart, he said it in his heart to pray, or the New American Standard is he had the courage to pray. I mean, where did Dode ever pray?
Yeah, where's the word courage here, and where is heart? There's no
he wasn't lacking in courage.
No.
And we call him Leb.
Your implement,
inner being.
And then La Palal. La means to approach.
Yeah.
And Palal means to investigate, to anticipate intervention, to render a thoughtful decision, to ask an intelligent question, to exercise good judgment.
Well, I found all that too, so if anybody thinks it ain't there, is to judge officially or mentally, to intervene, to interpose, to make judgment. That's exactly what it means. All of the above.
Yeah, and you look at the letters again, it means to speak as a shepherd about shepherding.
The double L.
And you're talking to the ultimate shepherd. Yeah. Who reveres and likes to communicate through shepherds. And he told Dode, I want you to shepherd my flock.
Yeah. So
and what was he going to mean his thoughtful decisions and his investigation on? About coming into your presence. La pene ata. Coming into your presence. Arriving face to face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means palav. To come near and ask questions. Exercise good judgment. Request mediation and intercession. Speaking out regarding about to coming into your presence. And it was written in the hit pa'al infinitive, which means Dode is acting on his own initiative to deliver all of the verb's implications, which are thoughtful decisions and intelligent investigation, becoming the living embodiment of what it means to exercise good judgment.
So the helpful intensive is to do it to yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is what I wrote about it some time ago. Yeah, that's right, to do it to yourself. Palal. Yeah, exactly. Palal is almost always rendered pray in Bibles published by religious institutions, but that's not what the word means. It actually speaks of exercising good judgment by making comparisons, thereby discriminating fact from fiction after a thorough investigation. It is to decide by cutting through the evidence that is observed so as to discern what is trustworthy. Palal is not only a thinking verb, it addresses the idea of asking questions, of receiving answers, and then expecting intervention. As a result of what is understood, to Paul is to speak favorably, intelligently, knowledgeably, and persuasively about the expected reconciliation of a relationship, making declarations which advocate and promote a particular and anticipated consequence based upon the circumstance. Now, this is the other point that I wanted to make about this style of translation that we have here.
Okay. Now,
first of all, We're using the oldest texts that are available, so we'll look to see how the Masoretes may have altered their text from the Dead Sea. So the Dead Sea Scrolls are available. We're going to use that. Second, we're going to accurately and consistently translate every word that fits the context of the statement and is consistent with Yahweh's nature. Third, we're going to provide a complete answer so that if 10 words provide a more complete answer than one, we're going to provide all 10 and not shortchange God on what he meant to communicate. And then we're going to try to ascertain why the stems and conjugations and the moods were chosen, and to thoughtfully render them to the best of our ability in English, what they mean, as we did here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about what are the implications of these things. You know, what does it mean that rather than pray, God is speaking about exercising good judgment, about thoughtfully investigating, and the difference between the two? To pray is to talk to God.
Right.
To investigate is to listen to God. That's why he began this by saying, you know, you opened my ears. Well, if he's opened his ears, the last thing he's going to be doing is blabbing. He didn't say you opened my mouth.
No.
That you opened my ears. So he's listening to God. And he's exercising good judgment based upon what he's heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, it used to be one of my very favorite people. He's since passed away and is celebrating his relationship with Yahweh at this point, but Richard. But when I first announced that there's not a single place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms where God asks us to pray to him, not once. And that was hurtful to Richard because he liked his conversations with God. And they didn't try to discourage him from talking to God. God likes to listen to his children. But my point was, and God's point is, that at this point in our lives, we can learn a lot more from him than he can learn from us. He knows a lot more than we do. And so in our conversation with him, at this point, we're far better served if we do very little talking and a lot of listening. And if you're blabbing to him, you're not listening to him. If you're talking to him, you're not reading what he had to say. We're vastly better off in this point in time of our relationship listening to what he had to say, examining what he had to say, and thinking about it. And if we want to respond, I respond. You know, say, well, that was insightful. That was profound. I'm enjoying this conversation. I'm enjoying, you know, learning from this. That's just fine.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to go through a lot of translations and not go off and, boy, yeah, you're really sharp, man.
Yeah. What are we gonna talk to God about? Do you think that God needs to know that, you know, I want to understand your word better? Doesn't he think he already knows that?
Yeah,
I want to have you forgive me. We've already got a means to do that. It's done.
Yeah, that's I haven't thought about that since I met you.
To save your country, to help your leaders? He's anti-government.
Yeah.
So he's not going to do that. Don't ask him to do something he's opposed to doing. If you begin by using Lord, which is Satan's title, do you think he's going to listen to you?
No, he won't hear you at all.
Right. And why should he intervene in healing you or a loved one of some ailment? So if he intervenes on for you but doesn't do it for somebody else, is that fair?
No.
Did he, if he didn't want Susie Q to have malaria, he could have prevented her from getting malaria. What would be the purpose of, once she's already got malaria, having it go away? I mean, it's ludicrous.
Well, I think
to ask God to intervene in the minutiae of life. If he interacted in the minutiae of life, what's the purpose of free will?
Yeah, well, that's the better answer, because where does it stop?
Where does it stop? Where does it start?
He said he would protect you, and he said that he would. enrich you and help you along the way, you know, in the things and help you to be a better implement. But life is tough, you know. Things happen, but you still, the end game is so much better. Yeah.
Right. You know, I've had this sore back for the last better part of 2 weeks. Today, I just decided, you know, I'm just going to ignore it, and I worked all day. And I did all sorts of things today that ought to have thrown my back just for Fruit Loops. Doesn't hurt at all. I'm sitting here in this chair. It doesn't bother me in the least tonight. You know, sometimes you just kind of get over it and get about doing what you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and
then you got to play this thing.
This world is tough. It would not have been tough. And there will be a day when it's not tough, when we're all living again during the celebration of the Shabbat, during the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah. There aren't going to be any aches and pains.
No.
We'll still be engaged doing stuff. You know, the Yehudim in particular are going to be Yah's administrators. There'll be lots to do, but struggle, no. But...
Well, look at the
can't intervene in all manner of minutia. You know, and to have him, to thank him for a home run or a touchdown is just ludicrous.
No, he don't care about my golf swing.
No. You know, there's things God cares about. He cares about his word. He cares about his family. If you are, and he cares about religion, but in the negative sense, he hates it. So if you're exposing religion and politics, and doing so thoughtfully based upon his testimony, he's going to engage with you.
Yeah,
if you are sharing his testimony about his family, trying to translate and understand, derive insights from his word and share them, you're doing something that he is going to engage with you. He's going to support that. You don't have to ask him to support.
No.
You looked up Bilal. Did you have to ask God for the insights, or was just the time spent trying to learn them?
I've grown to have some concept of all these things that on what Yah was doing and what He says, and I know these pretty well. As you know, that they say, and you've got some, you got that down. So you should be able to extrapolate from that. Wait a minute, this doesn't fit. In fact, the Palal thing started when right before Richard died, he sent me a thing about worship and prayer. And I told him no, and this is why. And I gave him a long letter back, and he said, "Yeah, I guess so." You know, he seemed to be happy, satisfied with what I sent him. And so, but I get that a lot. I mean, from friends, they talk about it because I'm open my mouth and I say, "There's no such thing as God didn't ask you to pray. He certainly doesn't want you to worship Him." And praise beyond good shot or wonderful. Boy, this is terrific, what you wrote here.
Right.
Gets to be somehow insincere after a while, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, exactly. A God that would create a being to praise Him isn't worth knowing.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
so I look up all those
notion,
words.
Yeah, God created a being to praise Him, to worship Him, is so demeaning to Him that it's amazing that half the world, two-thirds of the world population thinks God wants to be praised and worshipped. We all worship the same God. No, we don't.
I have a worship service.
Every one of you in religion are worshiping a God of man's creation, and it's always a different God. But those of us who actually know Him don't worship Him.
No.
I respect Him. Yeah. I enjoy Him. I like Him. Yeah. I think He's really smart.
Your respect is fine.
Yeah, right. But I look at Him as Dad. And, you know, and my relationship with Him is not just Dad. I really don't have a God relationship with Him. I've got one that's Dad, and I have my favorite with Him, though, is really Friend.
Yeah.
You know, just like with Abraham and the covenant, they were friends.
Yeah.
I like the friend aspect of it the most. No, I recognize their relative difference, but Yahweh is going to bridge all of that. He's going to make the difference between you and He insignificant.
Yeah, He's going to lift us up. That's the whole point.
Right.
When he turns you into light or light being or whatever that actually is, energy being, and he elevates you where we can really be buds. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And he's not afraid. He's solid and true and never. We just went through all that. This whole verse is about, yeah. You know, he's stable as a rock. You can count on me. I'll never. And later we're gonna find he never deserts you. Never. Yeah. When he's talking to Solomon, you've got to trust him. He's totally reliable.
So then Dodd says this. So now Yahweh, he didn't say now Jesus, he didn't say now Allah, and he most certainly didn't say so now Lord. So now Yahweh. And he said it out loud, which means that, wow, if he was a religious Jew, they would they'd crucify him. Well, they couldn't crucify him, but they would certainly
criticize him.
Yeah. So now Yahweh, you as God, have spoken about your coworker regarding these good and generous, pleasing and joyful things. That's it. This idea that we're supposed to please God is nonsense. This thing that we're supposed to give God generous gifts is nonsense. It's the other way around. Don't figure it out. Going, Yahweh was offering and had committed to giving Dodd good and generous, pleasing and joyful things. Tobah, which is good, productive, mm-hmm. beneficial. So things, the things which are good, valuable, moral, festive, beautiful, productive, favorable, and enjoyable. Henceforth, be willing to boldly, continuously, and confidently bless La Barak, the family of your implement, so that they may approach and continue to exist in your presence, because you, Yahweh, have kneeled down in love to lift them up and favor them, Barak. And so they are blessed, favored, and lifted up, Barak. Barak is written three times here. And it's Yahweh who is doing the Baraking.
Yeah.
Henceforth, be willing to boldly, continuously, and confidently, that's Ya'al, Southerners speak Hebrew.
Yeah, I mean, see,
y'all.
I told you he was Southern. He came from the Southern heaven.
Oh, God, yeah. Y'all continue with determination towards the conclusion, content to be pleased to accept. The agreement is resolved to bless La Barak, to kneel down, to greet in love, and to lift up, invoking favor, demonstrating a positive disposition towards the family of your implement. The family of the implement is the covenant. Go ahead, Kurt.
I know. You know, we've talked about Barak a lot over the last few years, and in particular in this verse when y'all were talking last week. But Yahol, I thought, was quite striking as well, because it's, and the older meaning is placing of a yoke upon the shoulders to perform a task. And we're talking about what Yah's doing. He's doing all the hard work, all the heavy labor.
Correct.
He's the one that's looking down to lift us up. I couldn't lift him up anyway. I couldn't do the heavy work.
Yeah, the idea that we're supposed to lift God up is just ludicrous.
Yeah. It's just
He's a seven-dimensional construct. There's enough of God to create a six-dimensional universe that is beyond our capacity to even fathom. How in the world are we going to lift him up?
Yeah.
But he sure as heck can lift us up, and needs to, for us to engage in an eternal relationship with him. So Barak means to bless, to kneel down in love, to lift up, to favor.
Mm-hmm.
Your implement, the family of your implement, which is the covenant family, so that they may approach and continue to exist, Lihaya, forever, La Olam. There's just your...
that's one of my little pet things. Because Terry said, well, what come forever don't mean forever in Christianity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. In your presence. Right. In your presence. So I'm going to exist forever. Where? In your presence. Why?
In your presence.
Because you, Yahweh, have knelt down in love to lift them up and favor them. And so they are blessed and favored and lifted up forever, Olam. Now, the thing that is so important here is that religions, you know, in Islam, you get down and you prostrate yourself.
Now it's five. It used to be
five times, three times a day. You know, doing these prostration prayers, and then in Christianity, they even have kneeling racks within the pews of churches. You get down on your knees, you bow your head, you pray. That's the opposite of what God's intending to do. As you say, we can't lift God up. God does not want us bowed down. You'd bow down before a Lord. Lord is Satan. You never bow down before a Father. Yahweh is our Father. But the most important thing that you can understand is that Yahweh got down on his knees to lift us up. Yahusha is God on his knees.
No joke.
The diminished manifestation of God. Yahusha is God on his knees. That's why that hand, the Yod, is reaching down and out to us. That's why the two Hays in the name are two people standing up and reaching up to God. The entire purpose is for God to do what he can do, and only he can do, to lift us up so that we can be with him. And he never asks us to do what we cannot do, which is to lift him up, which would serve absolutely no purpose. Even if we could do it, it'd be counterproductive.
Yeah. Where are you going to lift him up to?
Yes.
He's in the seventh dimension. He's got everything. He
yeah.
speaks. Nothing becomes
right.
everything. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you offering him now?
Yeah.
Friendship.
We're in. That's like you painting a platypus in on your canvas, and then having the platypus somehow in two dimensions lift you up in three dimensions.
No.
Yeah, good luck with that. As soon as you're able to do that, then I will favor even the platypus. This is something we'll pick up next week, but we can go ahead and just begin on it. It says, then Dod, the beloved, said to Sholomah. Sholomah is actually Solomon's name. It's S-H is the first letter. That's the Shin. Lamed, Ma, and then the at the end. So it's Shalomah. It means reconciliation and restoration. It's a derivative of Shalom.
Mm-hmm.
My son, Ben. I had it in my thinking, in my judgment and desire, that I would build for the family a home, to recognize and to approach the name of Yahweh, my God. Well, that's really interesting. So, that, you know, then Dod thought that he was going to be able to do this. But Dod's view of purpose of the home, not a temple, not a shrine, the home,
home.
Was to approach the name of Yahweh. Not Allah's name. The name of Yahweh. Why? Because you approach the name of Yahweh, you know him. You are on a first name basis with the creator of the universe. You understand what he's offering and how to approach him. Then it came to exist with me, the word of Yahweh, to say, too much blood you have shed, and a great many wars you have engaged in. So you shall not build a home for my name, because of the substantial quantity of blood you have spilled upon the land before my presence. Behold, a son shall be born to you who shall exist as an individual of favor and tranquility, freedom and contentment, and I will free him from conflict and all of his enemies from all around, because Shalomah, reconciliation and restoration, harmonious relationship, shall be his name. So favorable reconciliation and satisfying restoration, shalom, and freedom and unfavorable circumstances and conflict I will give to Yisrael throughout his days. Now, we're still recording but not broadcasting anymore.
Well,
it is interesting that Yahweh, as much as he loved Dod, as much as he's committed to the kingdom of Dod during the 1,000 years that we will begin to enjoy beginning it with Sukkah in 2033, year 6000 Yah.
Mm-hmm.
That Dod, the whole kingdom is going to be built off of the, based on the kingdom of Dod. This is God's favorite son. And yet, he told his son, no, 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 you're not going to build my house.
Many deaths, many lives, some souls go.
Because the covenant is the celebration of life.
Yes.
The celebration of life. It can't be built, no matter how beloved, by someone engaged in war.
Well, one thing he did do, that in order to fulfill this prophecy, short-term prophecy, is he was the one that finished off the Amalekites that allowed Solomon to be without conflict.
Yes, he was the one that finally did them in.
Yeah.
The Amalekites are, of course, the forebears of Islam. And just as Yahweh will ultimately do Islam in after the fall of Damascus, and they come as a great tsunami into Israel, Yahweh, during the Magog War, will obliterate Islam. And then upon his return, he's going to obliterate Christianity, and Judaism will cease to exist right before his return with the reconciliation of his family, of Israel. But the three big religions of the world are all obliterated in that order.
Forgive me, but that is so cool.
It really is. Islam first, and the Magog War, Armageddon obliterates and ends Christianity. And then right before his return, Judaism ceased to exist when the children of Israel are ultimately recognize Yahweh for who he really is. So they accept the terms and conditions of the covenants of the world's three religions, and to a large degree, at the end of time there'll be an integration really of socialist secular humanism and Christianity, and they're really both obliterated at the same time. You even got the 200 million likely Chinese that mm-hmm. march in on the road, that they're spending $100 billion
building right now. They've been building it for several years now.
Through Western China and Pakistan. It's the most expensive, the single most expensive project in the history of humanity is that road. They're going to march right in. And so that will represent socialist secular humanism, which will also be destroyed along with Christianity during that battle. But all of man's religions will cease to exist at that time. But what God is saying is that his family is about life and a celebration mm-hmm. of life. And therefore, it cannot be constructed by a man of war. And, you know, I had always thought that the reason that Dod couldn't build the house, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought it was because of his bad decision with Bathsheba.
He sent his
most able general who was married to her out to a battle, knowing that he would be likely that he'd be killed so that he could take his wife.
But that wasn't it. Yeah, the blood on him makes more sense.
Yeah, God didn't like that, but that wasn't it. And you could say, you know, this idea that Christianity is all about, you know, you can't be promiscuous and sexual sin is this horrible thing. Well, you know, in reality, Dod was never criticized for having a harem. So God can't be that wasn't listed as one of the concerns. Dod made it very clear that he was more flawed than he had hairs on his head. So he violated the covenant and the Torah every which way. But none of those things were listed. And God didn't even say that him fighting those wars was in violation of the Torah. He just says,
he was always cleaning up Israel because it didn't do it at the beginning. You know, from the first
right.
time.
Yeah, and I think a large part of it is that unfortunately the children of Israel, as they came in from the Exodus, they were told what to do to eliminate this plague of death that was infecting the land, and they didn't do it.
That's right.
And so Dodo had to start with another crowd,
so
right,
another
right.
generation,
and Dodo didn't have to go outside of didn't have to go outside of Israel. To go and fight these wars.
He was just trying to clean up
his home, rid the home of this plague of death, of the disease of politics and religion. And so what he was doing needed to be done, but it wasn't the example that Yahweh wanted. He wanted the covenant relationship is about shalom. Israel is. Jerusalem is the source from which direction and teaching about shalom, reconciliation, flows. So Yahweh wanted his home to be about reconciliation, not about war.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to be built as a tribute to war or by a warrior.
Or
even though the warrior did what needed to be done, the house was cleansed. Now, unfortunately, Solomon made a lot of bad choices in terms of bringing into his household Gentile pagans.
Oh, yeah.
And he unfortunately embraced a lot of it. And Solomon was a lousy example.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, Israel... didn't survive long after him.
He didn't survive after his death. Then you got Jeroboam heading off, Rehoboam heading off, and he's been in the house of Pharaoh for the last 10 years before his father died. Before he comes back as a proxy, and then they invade, take all the stuff, all the wealth that had been stored up. They take it all back to Egypt.
I mean, because Dodo spent his life ridding Israel of all of this. This Gentile religious and political influence, the disease, Solomon brought it right back in.
Yeah.
And so...
That's very tragic.
It didn't survive. It is stunningly tragic. Foresaw all of it and knew this was going to happen and established the timeline for the ultimate reconciliation, and it's all going to play out. And could there have been a lot more members of his family? Yeah. But there's just not going to be, and in a way, we ought to be grateful.
Yeah.
Because if Israel had never strayed from...
Well, they wouldn't have gone after us. They never had a shot. Yeah, we might have known somebody locally that was Yehudim.
Yeah, But I think to a large degree, the reason that there's been an opportunity for us... And, when I say that, I have to be a little bit careful because there's probably 1,000 people that worldwide that have come to know Yahweh to one degree or another because of these books and these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a disproportionate number of them who are actually Yehudim.
Yeah.
I mean,
coming up on you think.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the two people we were defending when we did those two shows, where we stood behind the two women that wrote the letters, they're both Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
The first person to join the covenant as a result of this book is absolutely Jewish.
Yeah, up to him every week, just about.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, disproportionate number of the people that are. Way higher, many times higher than the percentage of population are Jewish. Yeah. The person that put together all of the websites is Jewish.
You will. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So while Yehudim are definitely favored by Yah, just no question, right. They're the chosen people. And I've got no issue with that, we've talked about Dod being the favored son. We will never be as loved by Yahweh as Dod is. I've got no issue with that either.
I'm fine.
I'm just happy to get there.
And, I can run over and see
you and I have talked about this before. Not having any responsibility, just being one of the fellas.
Yeah.
One of the fellas. Just
Where are they? Well, yeah, they're playing golf over there on about the 14th tee.
Yeah, highly desirable, yeah. Kirk and Craig.
Well, where you go?
Went over to this the solar system over here. They've got this one planet that they terraformed to make a golf course that was a combination
of
Augusta National and Pebble Beach. And they're off playing it. Yeah, we could go. Well, they'll be back for the Shabbat, and they'll be back for the mikveh. Not to worry. They'll come for all the family.
They got good watches. They ring a day ahead so they know what's coming.
Yeah, they're off doing that. Oh goodness.
Yeah.
So just by reading what Yah has to say about Dode, with Dode, just every statement. There is a lifetime's worth of learning in every statement.
Isn't that really true? I mean, it just amazes me. I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, I've been amazed for a long time now. But
yeah,
the more you dig, it's just there, and you find little nuances. And listen, 80% of the stuff I find, I never get a chance to tell anybody about or we talk anything about. It's just, I just sit there and go, well, isn't that fascinating? And some of the things would excite me that won't excite anybody else, and that's fine too. But there is a overriding, I guess, gestalt I get I go through all these different words like on these passages, and they just flow so well into the next word, and the meaning is carried over into the next one to some degree. If you dig enough, you know, that's what I was talking about earlier. If I could just know everything about that one word the way I do in it, perhaps in an English word where I can just, okay, I don't even have to think about it. That's why that's why it's going to be so marvelous to me to know that the Torah be in our being so that we'll know these things.
Right.
We'll know the language that God speaks if he indeed speaks that word.
Oh, yeah.
In different dimensions.
He's going to speak Hebrew. I mean, we will at times have mouths.
Yeah, okay.
We will be eating, we'll be drinking.
We will be able
we'll
to
be diminish thinking.
Ourselves and things like that too, so yes,
right.
Okay.
So we will on occasion transition from energy-based to physical-based beings to the degree that you can be a physical-based being in the seventh dimension because... we're told.
Could you do that in
the fields and the celebration? I am certain that there's a way to do that. Three dimensions can exist in seven.
If seven can,
all right. Seven can exist in three.
Not the
three
other
can
way
exist
around.
In right. That three makes... can easily exist in seven. And when you take on physical form. Time flows in its normal rate. And when you take on physical form, you can sing, you can speak, and the language we're going to speak is Hebrew. And you have to communicate using language. You think in language. It's just that we're all of our language, we're all going to speak one language. The one language will be Hebrew, and we'll have a perfect understanding of it. And at that time, we're going to have Yahweh's teaching, his guidance, literally incorporated into our very nature. So we're going to know exactly what he is instructing and guiding us relative to how we can maximize our enjoyment out of the experience in the new universe.
I thought it has to be that way because Malug doesn't all of a sudden turn around and ask him, what do you mean? They know exactly what it means, I don't know what you've been reading. What Roy's been talking about is that, but a Malach could—he speculates that a Malach could just walk right through the dimensions in a second. You know, he doesn't travel; he just goes from this to that. I thought, that makes sense. You know, it's a little tough. Understand what he's saying. They don't waste a lot of time to get there. You know.
Oh no, because. In fact, I just had this whole conversation with Dee, who was saying, how is it possible that she views that there were four times in her life, either three or four, where she should have died, where she's convinced that God intervened to keep her alive so that she would then have the opportunity to accept the terms and conditions of his covenant. She's saying, you know, how was it possible for God to intervene before he knew that I was going to accept the covenant? And what I explained to her is that our problem there is that we have a linear interpretation of time. That's all we know. We know that time flows from past, present, and into the future. And so you see events of earlier in your life of God intervening before events later in your life where you accept it. But that's not how God sees time.
No.
It's just like we can't visualize the fourth dimension. Now, I guess Einstein had this ability to somehow visualize four dimensions, but you and I can't. We can't visualize how time exists as a dimension along with the three dimensions that we understand. But on a photon of light, time is.
Time exists.
There is no ordinary flow of time. That's why the Malak can instantly go from anywhere in seven dimensions to anywhere in three dimensions at no time, because speed is distance over time. But if time doesn't move, you can go from anywhere to any place in no time.
But doesn't time have to move a little bit?
I mean,
because time can't stand still, because then nothing would be...
No. Time's not standing still. It's not timeless.
Oh, okay.
Time exists.
Okay.
Time exists. It doesn't stand still.
Yeah,
now,
that's my
is it possible if you were a five-dimensional, six- or seven-dimensional construct, and now you're moving... time is one of those dimensions that you are now able to enter. And just in three dimensions, we can stop if we wish to. And we can go up, we can go down, we can go left, we can go right, we can go back, we can go forth. We can maneuver all we want to in these three dimensions. We can keep on moving, we can go backwards, we can go forward, we can go up, we can go down. But time is a dimension. Ultimately, we will be able to maneuver in time just as we maneuver in the three-dimensional world we're in. And since time exists on a photon of light, Yahweh as spirit equates himself to light, that means that Yahweh can see time differently than we can.
Yahweh sees the whole parade, don't he?
He can see it all at one time. So that if he can see it all at one time, he is fully capable of seeing your acceptance before he asked the Malak to engage to spare you so that you can get to that acceptance. You know, his perspective on time is very different than ours, just as our perspective of what we can do in three dimensions is so different than somebody who experiences and can move in four dimensions. So it'd be like asking Mickey Mouse to understand the world of Walt Disney. Can't do it. In Flatland, there is no concept of that third dimension. Just as for us, there's no concept in 3D of what four dimensions is really like. And yet reality is five, six, and seven. You know, it's interesting. I watched the movie last night, Interstellar. I don't know if you ever saw that McConaughey movie about traveling because the Earth is failing. They're trying to find a new destination, and they approach a black hole. There's a lot of relativity in it.
Bookcases and everything, or the bookcases.
Yeah, the bookcases. The father and the daughter. Throughout that movie, they're saying that the difficulty of them understanding what's happening is that they can't, that the universe is likely six dimensions, and they can't perceive anything beyond the three that they exist in. So throughout the movie, they're talking about relativity and how time flows at different rates and how there are more dimensions, and that our inability, our lack of capacity of understanding what those added dimensions actually are and how they interact and intersect.
And your parents is younger, and her hasn't changed enough because of his speed, and she's quite, his daughter's now quite old. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was good. Yeah,
yeah,
that was right.
Entertaining.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the last movies McConaughey did that was really entertaining. All right, my friend. Well, that was fun. We'll pick this up again with this same statement of Dode talking about Solomon and Yahweh talking about Solomon, and this is 1 Chronicles 22:7 through 9. Why Dode can't build the house, what Solomon's name means. There's a lot to digest.
Okay. And look forward to next week. I do indeed. Thank you for
me too. Yeah, this was fun. Yeah, thank you, Kirk.
Yes,
good night.
See you later.